all right, you've seen on CNN and MSNBC and the New York Times, not a lot in the Indianapolis Star, about Moral Mondays down in North Carolina. Dr. William Barber, head of the North Carolina NAACP, was one of many people to kind of push that movement forward. He is here in the high school that his mom is a proud Tiger graduate from, because Brother Barber got some Indianapolis roots. And it's a privilege to have you here, Dr. William Barber. Welcome.
I'm glad to be here, Brother Brown. Yeah, it's kind of interesting to be in this school and to think that my mother was in these hallways. She's a great friend of the Big O, like all people. And my grandfather came here from West Virginia through the WPA program. My mother went to Lane Business College.
Hello.
She was a government worker. She was a Silver Air Patrol. My father went to CTS, went to Butler, went to Indiana U, pastored here in the city for a moment. So, and I was born here August 30th, 1963, 2 days after the March on Washington.
And I understand you also have a connection to what used to be the Second Christian Church, which is now Light of the World.
Yeah, my father was one of the associates way back when it was Second Christian. He later worked at Flanner House and started a church, I'm not sure, I think it was New Hope Christian Church, before he actually left. He got a Macedonian call to come back to his home in North Carolina, because the schools in North Carolina as late as 1969 were still segregated. And so my mother and father went back home, made a decision that they would put me in segregated public schools in the South for 2 years in order that they might be on the front line of pushing forward a desegregation.
What is Moral Mondays, and what happened in North Carolina, and what do you hope happens here in Indiana?
Well, you know, the story is somewhat lengthy. I'll try to capitalize it. 8 years ago, we started something in North Carolina called the Forward Together Movement, the historic Thousands on Jones Street People's Assembly, when Democrats were in office. And we in the NAACP, I had just become president, said, listen, why are all the advocacy groups fighting separately for issues? Why don't we find a way to come together, even when Democrats were in office? And we all looked at which power group had the most influence either for or against the issues we were concerned about. And we found out it was the General Assembly and the governor. Then we went down the voting list and we looked at all of the voting, and we found the same people voting against environmentalists were also voting against public education, were also voting against labor rights, were also voting against the LGBT community. And the question was, if they were mean enough to be together, why weren't we smart enough to come together?
When you all started demonstrating at the state capitol in, it's Raleigh, right?
Right. Because we actually started marching on the capitol 7 years ago. But fast forward to 2013, we had a supermajority governor and legislators come into office, and they were on
Republicans, sound like here.
Right. We call them extremists, and I'll tell you why that is in a minute. They masquerade as Republicans. But they're actually Tea Party Koch brother extremists to the nth degree. First 50 days, they denied 500,000 people health insurance, Medicaid, 900,000 people earned income tax credit, 170,000 people unemployment, cut $1 billion from public education, fired 5,000 teachers, raised taxes on 89% of North Carolinians to give 11% a tax cut. And then on Monday, Thursday, during Holy Week, they wrote the worst voter suppression bill we had seen since Jim Crow, even before the Shelby case, Amos. It was right then that our coalition decided we had to go to the next level. We had been marching, we had been working with Democrats, but this was something different. Mm-hmm. And we decided if they were going to crucify the sick, the poor, and voting rights, then we were going to make sure that crucifixion had a witness. And so on April the 29th, 17 of us went into the legislature, 7 pastors, 10 people, 1 lady with cerebral palsy, to pray, to speak out, to sing, to lift up an alternative agenda to extremism. They arrested all of us, including the woman with cerebral palsy, rolled her right out in her wheelchair, put her right in the paddy wagon. The next Monday, people came. We didn't even have to call them. Mm-hmm. The next Monday, by the end of the summer, 25,000 people had come. Over 980 people had been arrested. We took it on the road, and by February of 2014, 80,000 people showed up. Mm. Saying that we were against this extremism, we were against this extreme right-wing turn, and that we could do something better, and we had to reach high ground. Now, Amos, When we started, the governor was at 50% of the polls. You know where he is now?
What?
Under 30.
Under 30. And it's because this is a gubernatorial election this year, but it's got to set
2 years.
2 years.
But we elect all the members of the General Assembly. Mm-hmm. When we started, they were at 40% of the polls. Now they're under 17. Mm. When we started, almost all the issues we fought for, Medicaid expansion, continuing unemployment, earned income tax credit, were polling around 40%. Now they're all polling over 50% because people can see through this extremism. They have been released from their intoxication of the Tea Party, and their eyes have been opened and their conscience. And 16% of the people that have gone to jail in March are Republicans.
Mm. Their own folk.
In fact, the Republican mayor joined our movement over healthcare Medicaid expansion because the denial of Medicaid expansion caused his hospital to close, invited us in. He walked 273 miles to Washington, D.C. with Bob Zellner, the first white person to be hired by SNCC, to dramatize the shameful condition that he could go to D.C. and meet with Congress people up there, and his own Republican governor, Pat McCrory, wouldn't meet with him, nor would the Speaker of the House.
We're here with William Barber with Moral Mondays. You're here in Indianapolis, and where you can count on one finger the number of picket lines that occur in a year. Mm-hmm. You come from North Carolina, where some college students started one aspect of the civil rights movement in 1960. Mm-hmm. How do you come to a state and bring the activism that has always kind of been in North Carolina and some other places to this part of the world where the attitude is, well, we're mad, we're upset, but we just gonna stay home?
Well, enough pain will make people protest. And your governor, Pence, and this extremist legislator have created a lot of pain. You know, in this state, 800,000 people are still uninsured. Your poverty rate is over 15%. Over 30% of working people work low-wage jobs or low-income. 22% of your jobs are low-wage jobs. The child poverty rate is astronomical. And when you disaggregate this by race, it gets even worse. And when the only response to that that I hear of your governor is deny Medicaid expansion and cut taxes for the wealthy, voodoo economics that hasn't worked in the past and isn't working now. All over the country, people are starting to get a hold that we need a movement that's not about left and right, conservative versus liberal, but deeper, moral movement that says what are our deepest moral values, our deepest constitutional values. And finally, Amos, people are learning that we are in a place kind of like what Dr. King said when he said there are governors whose lips are dripping with the words of interposition and nullification. In other words, ALEC, the Tea Party, and the Koch brothers decided to come to states and take over state capitals because they know if they did that, they control tax policy and educational policy and voting rights. So Alabama's rising up now with Moral Monday. Tennessee, Georgia, Virginia, Wisconsin, Missouri, and now here in Indiana.
How important is it? Let me give you an example. While you were out on the road and heading toward Indiana, the Census Bureau started to release the American Community Survey for last year, 2013. And here in Indiana, we have reached a Hoosier milestone. Last year, 1,017,000 Hoosiers lived below the poverty rate. That number hadn't been that high since the Great Depression, and only 191,000 of them were black. So that means that's white folk.
That's right.
That might be a Tea Party person or two. But the media in this state, the wire service, the Indiana University that always analyzes data, Ball State, none of them have reported this fact. So how does a Moral Monday get around a media that is more concerned with publicizing beer and irrelevant stuff than publicizing what's really going on in the Hoosier state?
Well, I believe a moral movement has to get not around the media, but get to the media. Mm-hmm. And you change the center of political gravity by having a moral movement, not just a march, not just one day. We've been at this 77 weeks. Mm-hmm. When we first started, our paper said we were just a hodgepodge of liberals. Mm-hmm. Now the editorials are saying, you know, this movement is the hope of the state. Mm-hmm. We had nearly 1,000 people arrested. I've said yesterday, people in Indiana are going to have to make some conscious decisions. There may have to be some civil disobedience. They may have to sit in the governor's office or the state legislature to dramatize what you just said is a shameful condition. It is sinful that in America we are the wealthiest and the poorest nation at the same time. It is absolutely constitutionally inconsistent, morally indefensible, and economically insane to accept a million people in your state being in poverty. And what we are learning, Amos, that many whites are starting to recognize that these Tea Party folk, they run on things like they're against homosexuality, they're for prayer in the school, they're against abortion. That's the hot button issues. They don't tell the people that if you elect me, we're going to raise taxes on working poor people and cut it for the wealthy. We're going to cut public education. We're not going to deal with the issue of poverty. But now they've become so arrogant with power, and pride always cometh before the fall. So their arrogance is actually causing people to stand up in more ways than we've seen in the latest few years.
Indiana was all, I've been here 40 years, and I learned early on that Indiana was a state that had a strong middle class base, whether it was our middle class farmers, whether it was middle class whites and blacks in manufacturing, whether it was middle class Hoosiers in some of the smaller cities of the state. Now, we're one of 15 states where income inequality grew, and only three states grew at the high rate from 2013 to 2012, Hawaii, Delaware, and Indiana. And it's almost like this goes against the grain of what Hoosiers are all about.
Well, that's one of the pieces that we're saying why we don't need a left, right, a conservative. We need a moral discussion. We need to change the debate. The Constitution of Indiana, you know the first principle is establish justice. That's the first principle. And then it says that Hoosiers are commanded by that Constitution, when it does not work to protect the happiness and life and safety of people, to alter that government. Our deepest moral values, talking to one of my Jewish friends the other day, there's a scripture in Isaiah 10 that says, woe unto leaders who legislate evil and rob the poor of their rights. We need to say no longer are we going to allow a moral discussion just to be around abortion, homosexuality, and prayer in school. Budgets are moral issues and constitutional issues. Education is a moral issue and a constitutional issue. How people are treated, living wages is a moral issue and a constitutional issue. And we can't let these leaders, especially when you have a governor like Pence who claims to be, from what I read in some places, not only, you know, affiliated with the Tea Party and a Tea Party darling and somebody who follows the templates of Alex, but claims to be an evangelical. Well, what kind of person of faith takes power and primarily uses it to help those at the top and not lift those from the bottom? That is contrary to our deepest faith values and our deepest constitutional values. That's why, Amos, here's the definition of the Forward Together Moral Movement. First of all, it must be homegrown, indigenously led. Nobody's going to come in from D.C. and rescue. Mm-hmm. I'm just here. I did this week to teach, but I said to everybody yesterday, you have to stand up here. Mm-hmm. Movements are built from Montgomery up, from Greensboro up, from Indianapolis up, not from D.C. down.
Let me put a pin in that, because I have listeners that will call up that are waiting on Denzel Washington to come riding in on a tank or a white horse or a black stallion to rescue us.
No. That is contrary to everything Dr. King told us in the I Have a Dream speech. He said, go back to Mississippi, go back to Alabama, go back with a state-based movement. He says, you have to deal with governors whose lips are dripping with words of interposition in your state. The March on Washington was only possible because we had activism going on in 200 cities. So now, interestingly, the Koch brothers took our prophet's design. In other words, Charles Koch, in a speech in 1974, said, listen, we're no longer going to invest in Messiah candidates. We're going to build a movement. We're going to go to the state level, get think tanks, and build grassroots movement. And what a lot of progressives did was we started basing our hope in Messiah candidates. Here's the problem. Nothing wrong with a candidate, but if that's all you have and no infrastructure, when the candidate loses the wind, then the infrastructure goes away. So Marl Mundy says, wait a minute, we need a homegrown, indigenously led movement that is deeply moral, deeply constitutional, anti-racist, anti-poverty, pro-justice, pro-labor, transformative fusion coalition. where blacks and whites and Latinos and LGBT and progressive, even Republicans and then Democrats and gay and straight, see the intersectionality of our issues and understand fighting alone we are weak, but together we're strong. And that's ultimately what this extremism wants us to believe. They want us to see ourselves as weak, but you know, if you got to pay off the Supreme Court and change the rules in voting to beat me, it's not a sign of my weakness, it's a sign of my strength if we get together.
Is that one of the challenges for next year, the next 3 or 4 years in elections? I mean, Barack Obama is not going to be on the ballot, and that energized a lot of people. And then there's the lesson of Ferguson, where people are saying, wait a minute, town was majority-minority, nobody voted in local elections, and the other side got in. Do you think that lesson of Ferguson will be learned this election? That people have got to understand state and local school board, that's as important, if not more important, than who's sitting in the White House?
Well, I argue that if you're going to change America, you got to think states. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is, we better learn it. Ferguson better learn. I was just there, and that's what, I didn't go down there to get on TV and all. I went to do organizing. I brought white evangelical ministers and black ministers and the kids in the hood and Jewish people together to talk about our common ground and where we needed to go. 400,000 white women in North Carolina voted in 2008 and 2012, didn't vote in 2010. That's how we got the mess we have. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason. 286,000 black people, same as in Indiana. If you check the record, this drop-off. President Obama was elected by fusion coalition. We cannot simply say we elect the president, because you know what the Tea Party folk have learned? We'll give you the president, we'll take over the state and change the voting rules, control who goes into Congress, and all the president will be able to do is pass executive orders. We have got to learn that democracy is hard, hard work, and you can never simply sit on the sidelines. And as a person of faith, my faith teaches me you got to do a lot more than just pray. You must work. You must put some legs on your prayers. And that's what this moral movement is saying.
Here in Indianapolis, we're overly concerned about crime. But when I look at, again, the statistics, mm-hmm. if you've got stagnant income, a high black unemployment that seems intractable, poverty, number of people going up, and it's not going down, the economy's supposed to be getting better, that's almost like the kind of desperation that forces people to do stupid, dumb, evil things.
Well, Coretta Scott King helped us one time, the matriarch of the movement, with this issue of this violence. You know, somebody asked her about violence because her husband had been shot, and they wanted to limit violence to which is wrong, people killing one another, black on black crime, or white on white crime, because most white people kill white people, most black. So you have white on white crime, just like you have black on black crime. But then Coretta did something. She said, wait a minute, violence is broader than that. She said, violence is locking people in a ghetto. Violence is not paying people living wages. Violence is denying people health care. Violence is undermining public education. And then she said, violence is even the apathy that keeps you from being engaged to change situations.
Mm. Wait, say that again.
So he said violence is even a form, that apathy is a form of violence when it keeps you from engaging in the work that can change things. Otto Schwammer at MIT says this. He says, every day in America, We operate in our economic systems with a blindness in our conscience, and we commit attention violence against the poor. So much so, Amos, that if the poverty, if the unemployment rate drops to 7%, we start shouting. But 7% of 255 million people is almost 25 million people. You know, you say the poverty level is only 10% or only 15%, but do the numbers. And so there is a violence that creates violence. It doesn't. I'm not excusing it. I run a program called Drug Dealer Gangbanger Redemption, where we actually bring drug dealers and gangbangers into my church. We quarantine it for 3 days. We don't let the people get in that want to keep them from getting out. We work with the judges and we work with the police. We've seen 61% of these guys turn around from that. But we also challenge the fact that we see these cuts in education, which is a form of violence, and the denial of living wages, which is also a form of violence.
Our listeners can't see that we're in a room here at Historic Christmas Attucks, and there's a number of young people that are kind of standing around, and they don't know whether they're looking at living history or just two guys, one with not a lot of gray hair, one with a lot of gray hair, talking. What message, Dr. Barber, do you have for these young people that are here in this historic school, as well as the parents and grandparents of all of our young people that are listening to our voices?
Well, I think everybody has to find their place. You know, when I talk about this moral movement, the fact of the matter is every age has always needed people who would engage in moral dissent. That's how the abolitionist was moral dissent. The first Reconstructionists, blacks and whites working in fusion politics, was moral dissent. Young people who led in the civil rights movement said, we love America enough to correct her. We love America enough to speak the truth. So what I say to these young people, as I say to my own children, I have five, is that you were born not just to take, but to give. You were born not just to accept reality, but transform reality. And I would say to them at this school, you're in Crispus Attucks High School, named after the first person who happened to be black who died in the Revolutionary War. Even though America was half free and half slave, he was willing to fight for this country, not because he believed in the slavery, because he believed in something greater for America. And so I hope that these young people never stop dreaming, never stop hoping, and never stop fighting. You know, 30% of the folk in the Moral Monday movement in North Carolina are young people. In fact, one day they said to me, Reverend Barber, we're going to step it up. I said, what do you mean? They said, on September the 15th, the anniversary of those four little girls being killed in a Birmingham church, we're going to carry caskets to the governor's office. And we're going to carry caskets to the legislature. And they did. And they said, Governor, when you deny people Medicaid, you're killing people. When you lock up people in prison who are illiterate rather than funding public education, you are killing the hopes and dreams and the economy. And you know, something strange happened that day. When we got to the legislature, they decided to light candles, okay, in remembrance of those who died in the past, but in hope of a future. The wind was blowing. And so the young people got around the caskets and they said, Denise, meaning Denise, who was one of the ladies who bombed, they called her name, would you stop flapping your wings over us just a second so we can light these candles?
No, the wind stopped. No, it didn't.
The wind just went. And those young people broke out in tears. And the truth of the matter, Amos, young people were the first civil disobedient act in the Moral Monday movement. They put tape over their mouth and sat in the balcony of the Senate the day that they passed the voter ID law that didn't even allow students to use their ID, saying you're trying to silence them. I watched young people sit in 12 hours one time and got arrested 4 o'clock in the morning fighting for living wages and Medicaid. So I say to these young folk, take all of your energy, take all of your intellect, take all of your education, but take all of that and commit yourself to be a change agent. We need you.
Dr. William Barber with the Moral Monday Movement in North Carolina, head of the Conference of Branches of the NAACP in North Carolina, on the national board, who gets to see my namesake, who's been on the national board of the NAACP, the older Amos Brown.
That's right, the Amos Brown from California. That's what he says.
That's what he said.
Well,
now you can tell him you done met the Hoosier one.
The Hoosier Amos Brown. That's right.
It's an honor and privilege to talk to you.
Thank you so much. As we fight, remember our critique in the Moral Monday Movement is this. We must examine policies and find out and examine when they are constitutionally inconsistent, morally indefensible, historically inaccurate, and economically insane. We must challenge them. We must challenge them because that's too low. It's low ground. And what we're trying to do is push America and push these states to higher ground.